Welcome to What the Fuck Did I Just Read? The Tech Sales and Marketing Edition. This is going to be a blast.
This isn't just a podcast to have a conversation. This is a podcast to effect change.
It's kind of our outlet for therapy, to just let it rip. Good morning and welcome back to another episode of What the Fuck Did I Just Read? Tech Sales and Marketing Edition. I'm your co-host, Danny Wolf. And today we have another co-host with us, but without a beard, equally beautiful, the one and only Maria Graham. Welcome, Maria.
Good morning, everybody.
So today we have Maria with us today because Chris is traveling. I think he's traveling to GurrCon, if I'm not mistaken. And he said, look, I can't make it today, but you run it. I'm like, well, this is a great opportunity to have Maria on the show, who's been listening, I think, almost since day one, right? Mm-hmm.
Since day one, I feel like.
Since day one, applying what she's been learning here on the podcast and has been able to establish a lot of trust and credibility with some pretty hard to reach people in our community. And so I thought Maria would be a great addition to the show to fill in for Chris today and give us a little bit of some practical tips and just stories and experiences on how she's killed her quota by doing things the right way. So thank you for agreeing to join us today, Maria.
Oh, you're so welcome. I'm so super excited to be here. You know, I'm a huge fan. I told you last night, I was like, oh, I'm kind of fangirling out, even though you're one of my best buds and it's just us. I'm so excited.
It is. And as usual, for those listening in, if you have questions for us, please don't hesitate. Drop them in the comments. Shoot us a message if you want to come on and just chat with us live. That's totally cool. Today, we're going to talk about, you know, again, how you've managed to successfully build relationship capital. I want to hear a little bit about your experiences, what's worked, what's not worked from a tactical perspective, strategic perspective. So we'll just noodle on it. Pretty much an organic conversation. And again, my hope is, like every week, our audience here will also add their insights to the conversation in the comments and coming on. So let's kick it off, Maria. Tell me.
Let's go.
Tell me who you are. I want to know who you are, what do you do, and why the hell you do it. And I'm asking this because there might be some new listeners in. And while we have a lot of veteran listeners who know who you are because Chris pretty much drops your name and Newspire's name on every episode, please tell us. Please tell us who you are, what do you do, and why do you do it.
Yeah, happy to. So for those who I haven't met, I think I've talked to most of the listeners here. My name is Maria Graham, and I am a senior account executive for a managed security service provider called Newspire. I've been with the company for 12 years. I like it there. It's a good place to be. I think we do a good job. But outside of that, like me as a person, I'm just a pretty raw, honest human being that enjoys making relationships with other folks. I enjoy honest conversations. I've got two beautiful daughters, a lovely husband, and an idiot dog. And that's about me in a nutshell.
Oh, idiot dog. Come on.
He's an idiot. He's so stupid.
What kind of dog?
Bless his heart. A mini golden doodle.
Okay, well, that explains some of it, but he's majestically beautiful, though. That's what matters.
He is majestically beautiful.
Okay. So tell me a little bit about your overall philosophy or approach to building relationship capital with buyers.
Yeah, I think it's changed over the last probably 18 months as I've been following some of the stuff you're doing and watching some of other industry leaders explain the right way to do things. But largely for me, relationship capital starts first with creating an emotional relationship, a human relationship with the person that you're trying to talk to. That's at least how I've been the most successful. So not worrying so much up front with the company or the org or what their challenges could be or if I can help or any of that kind of stuff. But, oh, this person lives in New York City. My brother lives in New York City. Let's talk about that and see, just build some sort of human connection. And then when you're doing that, I think the other thing that you have to be really good at doing is speaking in a way that they're going to understand. So try and speak their language, make it easy to understand what you're trying to do. Be very honest, be transparent, be forthcoming. And then along the way of doing that, making sure that you're credible. So you're not blowing steam up people's asses and you're credible with what you're saying. So on the tail end of that, right, you have to understand the human relationship, be credible in the way that you're trying to build a relationship and why. So, obviously I'm a salesperson. I have to sell things in order to put paycheck in my bank account. Right. But you have to start with that, and you can just say, you know, I'm here. I'd like to talk shop. I'd like to connect. I've seen some of the things, whatever you want to say. And then eventually be honest and say, eventually down the road when it makes sense, let's talk business. I'd like to understand what you're doing for this, or I want to understand what challenges you have for that. And typically I think if you've done a good job of building kind of that human, like that human relationship first, it's really easy to just ask the awkward business type questions. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, okay. 100%. But what happened 18, like what was the change moment? What happened 18 months ago that caused you to kind of shift the way you're building relationships?
So I think there was this like global pandemic, and the cybersecurity companies were inundating people with cold emails, cold calls. That is largely how we as account executives, BDRs, whatever you want to call us, that's how we were getting our outreach. And people used to work. It did, because people would answer their phones. People were in office. They would answer their desk phones. A lot of times they'd be willing to, you know, you get 100 dials in, 198 no's, 2 yeses. Great. That was kind of what you did. But that changed after, I think, this kind of paradigm shift to the work from home, and now people's cell phones are involved, and it's cringe, right? I don't like when people call my cell phones. And I started realizing that there's no in-person events anymore, right? I didn't go to any in-person events for almost 2.5 years. There was very few networking events. It just wasn't so, you weren't going on site and shaking hands and kissing babies. So I started to realize that I do like kissing babies, they're adorable. But I started to realize all of a sudden these personalities, these CISO personalities and these security practitioner personalities were coming out of the woodwork on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. And so then I started to try and figure out it seems this is where they're at right now. They can't be at conferences. There's Slack channels and all these things. So they've shifted their presence from a physical presence into this kind of digital presence. They're fed up with the amount of emails they're getting. They're fed up with the amount of phone calls they're getting, but they seem okay if you politely engage with content that they're posting on like a LinkedIn or some of the Slack channels that are out there. And that's when I started to kind of realize, okay, we gotta figure this out, because what I'm doing isn't working. I was having a hard time filling my pipeline. I personally don't like getting yelled at. I also personally used to entertain cold calls on my phone because I'm a salesperson. I have a level of empathy for that role, but I won't even answer them anymore. So if I'm doing that and I'm empathetic to the seller, these guys for sure aren't gonna do it. So we gotta shift. And you can't do the same things on a social platform that you could do with phone calls and emails.
Right. But how do you balance? Because my assumption is a lot of people are in this spot where there's an urgency to close deals. The quotas are looming. They're feeling the pressure, right, to get pipeline in, to bring in revenue to the business. So how do you balance the need to build relationships, which takes time, and get those deals closed and get those quotas in?
That is a really, that's an interesting topic. Carlos, actually, and I have talked about this a lot because it's a long game, but you can't think of it as a long game. It's not a game. You're just making friendships. And so there's a couple of things that you can do to help with that. You can't, one, hit your quota without building a relationship. I firmly believe people buy from people. So if they don't like it, it doesn't matter what you're doing, at least in the kind of space I'm in. I'm not in product, I'm in services. They're not going to buy services from somebody they don't trust. Mm-hmm. You have to build that relationship. And then I think the other thing that comes with these relationships is as time goes on, they continue to grow, but because you've built a human relationship, you know what, when I'm having a hard time or I've got a gap in pipeline, I just go to my clients or my friends in the industry that I've made relationships with and say, do you know anybody that's looking for help with like SOC services? Would you mind making an introduction? And guess what? You've made the relationship. They may be one of your clients. They may be a prospect, or they just might be somebody that's a good person, and you've hit it off. And that's another way that you can continue to add and grow to your pipeline. The other thing that I've noticed is just the community in general. If I've got plenty of relationships with folks that realize, you know, she's not terrible. She seems okay. And I don't sell GRC, and I have a friend that sells GRC services, and he'll hear on a call, like, you know, we're having a hard time. We don't have enough headcount. We don't have enough staff. And he knows enough about what I do to say, hey, I know somebody that might be able to help you with that. They're not affiliated with my company. We don't get anything out of this. It's just, I trust this person. Would you like me to make an introduction? So the relationship, I think that piece has been pretty critical for me the last, I would say, 18 months. That's how I'm building pipeline. It's really the only way to build it, I think.
How do you handle buyers who, you know, automatically, you know, stop you and say, nope, leave me the hell alone, who are skeptical or resistant? Because my assumption is you do reach that. There's not 100% yes, you know, happy to, you know, eventually talk or meet for coffee or tea or whiskey or whatever.
Tea or whiskey. So I think a lot of I don't know what everybody else's thoughts are on this, but I don't run into like the curmudgeon as often as I used to, because largely the curmudgeons, they're not going to talk to you in the first place if they're not interested. Mm-hmm. Folks that are willing to have a conversation with you, generally you're not talking about the business stuff again. First, you start with human. Tell me how you got into the industry. What's your origin story? Oh, okay. Let's whatever. Figure out kind of who they are as a person. And then just by that kind of conversation and the flow of how that goes, it's been my experience more times than not, you can tell this guy is kind of hesitant or this gal's hesitant. I'm not going to go there. I'm not going to push. I will share my origin story and kind of where I'm at. And now these people know that I exist. I'm not going to push you if there's nothing there that doesn't make sense to me. I'm not going to follow up with you 1,000 times. I'll stay engaged with you. From a human level, but I think that's like the largest thing. I mean, I'll tell you, the scaredest I've ever been in my life was getting on an initial call with Chris, because I mean, have you seen? I don't know who this person is. I followed him, and he's just tasering salespeople left, right, and center on the freaking internet. And I'm like, I don't know if I want to. I don't know. I don't know. What am I gonna do here? And it was really easy though. I got out. I said, so I get it. You hate salespeople. You don't like the way I'm not going to pitch you. I'm not going to show you slides. Why did you want to take a call with us? And then let me help you from there. So just doing a little bit of research too, because you can find out from a lot of these folks that are vocal, kind of, you know, what are they like and yeah. Going from there.
So
and if you can connect on that human level, sorry, you can disarm them. Like I'm at a trade show last week, for example, this guy comes up and, he has this really like wild shirt on. I said, hey dude, I really like your shirt. He goes, thanks. It's Duluth. I go, my husband loves their underwear. He gets a pair every Christmas. And it turned into a 20-minute conversation on the cooling technology about Duluth underwear. And then he goes, so what do you guys do? Right. But this guy looks like a crappy person. So it's just kind of, I don't know. That's what I do.
Yeah. Well, if it doesn't work out, just, you know, throw in underwear somewhere, but in context, So you talk about researching, which is a huge thing. And Chris and I always promote researching who you're going to be talking to in order to start establishing that relationship. Would it be all right if we kind of go through your process to how you research people? Like let's break it down into the steps, like tactical steps. Okay. I go to LinkedIn here. I go to SalesNav here. Like we kind of touched on this offline together. Would you be willing to give us a little bit of a looky into how you do that tactically?
Yes.
And again, side note, caveat people, this might not work for other people. This is what works for you. And I'd love to learn a little bit more and share with everybody how you do it.
Okay. Yes. So this is like very interesting. I think it's really important for sellers to understand, kind of the maturity of the services or products that you're selling, because leadership's going to tell you one thing, marketing's going to tell you a different thing, product marketing's going to tell you a different thing, but you're the one on the, it doesn't matter, in my opinion, what any of those people say. They can have input, but you're the one on the front line talking to people and understanding what resonates largely. So understanding kind of the maturity of what you're selling to folks and kind of the outcomes it drives is the first step. And then from there, kind of figuring out, okay, what is my ICP? Who do I want to talk to? How large of a company? What regions do I want to focus in? Who are my ideal buyers? And from there, using tools like, you know, you can use a Zoom info or whatever you have at your fingertips to come up with some lists based on kind of those parameters. I usually go on specific industries that we've had success in onboarding different clients on recently, because I have testimonials and good solid references that can speak to a recent onboarding or something like that. I usually look at a company size and kind of annual revenue. Those are my brackets. How much? Because I know where New Spire fits. I'm not going to be the 800-pound gorilla, but I'm not an SMB type of shop either. So once I have that company list, from there I export that. I have it, and I'm not the most technology efficient human being out there. I have my accounts that I want to target, and then from there I'm in Sales Navigator, trying to find the people element. I think Sales Navigator is the most relevant because people tend to care what's on LinkedIn as opposed to these like databases where data is outdated and so on and so forth. And then from there, and this is something my friend Carlos actually showed me, and I love this approach, and I've been using it the last like month or so. From there, I've got in SalesNav 3 to 4 different lists: people that I want to engage with, people I've started to engage with, people I've connected with, and people that I've now met. And I use that as just to kind of keep track of what I'm doing, how I'm doing it, and so on and so forth. And then from there, I'm not calling, I'm not emailing. I'm keeping it all to LinkedIn, but not SalesNav. I do it on LinkedIn proper because the emails tend to get lost in people's other, they just get lost. So from there, once I see I have my list of people I want to engage with, I start following them on LinkedIn. I start engaging with their content. I start trying to figure out what is interesting about this person enough that I can then feel confident in reaching out to them and saying, hey, I really liked this, blah, 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 blah. Here's what I really liked about it. Would love to connect over virtual coffee sometime and just talk shop or whatever. But I only do that once I have had enough engagement where I think that they've recognized my name. It's not totally inappropriate. And then if something comes from that, I do a little bit more deep dive OSINT on the person. Again, not so much the company. I do high level company stuff. But the biggest thing to me is focusing on the person. What do they like? What don't they like? What groups are they in? Where do they go to college? Where do they live? And you can find all that stuff in 5 seconds. It doesn't take that long to figure that stuff out. And then using that to just start building a human relationship with them. And that's kind of what I do.
How do you manage all the data that you capture?
I'm just kidding. Again, it goes into those lists. So I really use those lists pretty religiously so that I can track within Navigator. You can see I've engaged. This person posted recently. It gives you a lot of information on the status of what you're doing with each of these different accounts. Mm-hmm. For ones that I've actually had conversations with, I'll then put those into my CRM as a different mechanism to be able to track those. But I'm really careful about doing that because the minute something hits your CRM, depending on where you work, yeah, there's potential those people start getting marketing blasts, or they start, you're now asked, is this an opportunity? No, this is just a relationship that I'm now tracking somewhere that's visible within the company, so you know what I'm doing. So largely Navigator, when I feel the relationship is matured enough, we've had some sort of business discussion, then I'll put it in the CRM.
Got it. Do you find that maybe it will help to put in those things in the CRM for maybe your future people or other sales or account executives, or maybe the founders, engineers?
Yes and no. The concern you get is when you start just putting stuff in the CRM and tagging it as certain things, you start getting a lot of questions on, is this an opportunity? Why isn't there a dollar amount associated? Because this is just a human relationship, man. There's nothing here from we've talked about our kids, our puppies, and like COVID shots. Like, I don't know anything about them. So that's why I usually wait to get it to kind of a status of more of a business discussion has occurred before I'll add it into the CRM.
Can you give us an example, or was there a specific deal that was particularly challenging, but was one primarily due to relationship capital that you've established?
Yes. I can.
All right, break it down.
I'm proud of this one. This is my favorite deal I've ever closed. It was 4 years ago or something like that. This is weird, actually. We got an inbound phone call from this company that happened to be right around the corner from where my headquarters is in Metro Detroit, Michigan. And I get on this phone call and there's five other super technical, like the most technical people on the call, and just start peppering them with questions. And I was like, what is happening? And I said, I'm sorry, let's slow down. Where are you calling from? Who am I talking to? And they explained that their boss, their CISO, had heard that there was an MSSP local to them around 10 minutes down the road. And he had started to hear really good things about them. They'd had already evaluated and selected somebody. The team had already selected an MSSP. They had talked to 13 different MSSPs. So I was number 14. And in sales speak, that's what you call column fodder. The chances of you winning something when you're number 14 are slim to none. But we were able to create such a close relationship with this team by doing things like getting on site, inviting them over, just building human relationships with these people, that it wasn't so much our technical capabilities. The platforms we were using on the back end at the time were still a little bit immature, but they really felt the partnership from us. Mm-hmm. And just silly things. And so they were very difficult. They were very difficult buyers. They were asking kind of questions that at the end of the day were a little bit nonsensical, because that doesn't actually matter for what you're trying to do here. But they were annoyed with us because their boss really liked us, and they were mad because they've already done all this evaluation. They selected, and their boss goes, well, let's try this one more time. So we really had to overcome a lot of like hiccups. And I mean, at one point they sent us raw data from their systems and wanted us to find one security event in it, like manually. And it was like thousands of lines of code, just really crazy crap they wanted us to do. And I'll never forget when, after all of that effort from not just me, I tend to bring in subject matter experts all the time, not solutions engineers or sales engineers, but actual practitioners in our SOC. That group did such a good job building credibility and being honest and having integrity that they had no choice, because what they kept saying they wanted was a really good partner. And somebody that they felt they could grow with, collaborate with. And I'll never forget when he said, when we got selected, he's like, you guys are like the eagle that swooped out of the sky and stole the prey everybody else had been chasing for months. And I said, why? And he goes, because of the relationship you've built with us. You did it with us as humans. You were very credible. When you didn't know how to answer something, you never pretended that you did. If you didn't do something yet, you were honest about it, but talked about ways we could collaborate so that NewSpire can get better, and that we could grow together in a partnership. And so that to me it's still to this day my favorite. It was the hardest sales process I've ever been through. They were very crabby people. But we did a good job of building relationships there, and it's different because that was face to face. I think it's different when you start talking about this now virtual age, where people are not flying to you to do a sales process. That we don't do that anymore. I don't think many people do that very much anymore. And I think in those situations, it's a lot harder to build that relationship. You have to have people committed to getting on camera, turn a camera on. Let's talk to each other. So NewSpire does a good job, I think, of always, doesn't matter if cameras are off on the client side, ours are always on. We might not look the most professional, but they're on. And I don't know. So I just think that's, I don't even know if that kind of rambled, but that helped.
No, it's great. Absolutely. I want to bring on Ally, who has a question for you. And then I'll bring on Paul, who has also a great question. So let's bring on Ally. What's up, man?
Doing well. How are you two doing?
Good. Not a stranger to WTF and Audience First. Nice to see you again.
Yeah. Good to see you too. Maria, I was thinking about, so I like to send people a connection request and then I'll send them an email at the same time to give them context on why I was connecting. I don't like the note that gets sent because I just don't like the way it looks when I receive them. How do you feel about that?
I have a really low conversion rate on responses to email. I don't know if I just don't know how to do it right or what the challenge for that to me is. I usually send it with my connection request and I usually get responses. But I think that's what works for me. I think if that's working for you and you're getting responses and it's well received, then
more power to you.
Yeah, I mean, I it's hard to run the data, right? Like, we have all these tools that don't really integrate well with the messenger function, but they do integrate well with the InMail function. And so that's kind of what started that, is one of the outreach tools I use. It only tracks InMails. And I like to run my data. I like to, because I have to, like, I know how a relationship's going, but the company won't necessarily see that unless either I copy paste my private communication, which I don't want to do, or I just use a transparent, like, this is a business communication, so it's obviously going to be tracked type of platform.
Yeah, I don't take it for granted. I think I am undoubtedly in a very different position at my company than a lot of salespeople are. Just since I've been there for 12 years, that's kind of, I'm kind of an anomaly, and I have been a top producer for those 12 years. I don't really get any questions ever about status of relationship, or what are you guys talking about, or did you log a call, or did you log an email? I don't have to deal with a lot of that from a leadership perspective. So I would be, you know, that's something that I would love to hear more about, folks that do have to deal with that. You know, how do you guys manage that? Because I that is not something, I realize I take it for granted that I really have to deal with all of that in terms of tracking and make it. Like, if you look at my CRM, I looked this morning, it said I've made 72 phone calls this whole year. That's not true. Right.
mine looks similar, unfortunately. And then and they're like, well, how are you doing this? It's like, well, I mean, it's hard for me to give you data on how I did it without me tracking it, which I don't want to do. But then, like, you end up on the other side of it where, like, I've managed SDRs before. And if you're just like, oh, I'm gonna track these metrics to make sure that you're like, they're kind of a leading metric so we can get to your actual goal, but we're going to track this. But then undoubtedly what happens is they just start working toward the metric, which ends up with crap.
Well, that's the problem though. But that's what the whole problem with this is. Like, and again, I realize, I think my company's a bit of an anomaly, but we're not tracking the KPIs unless people aren't hitting. Like, for SDRs, what's the goal? Book a meeting. That's your goal. Book a meeting. For sellers, what's your goal? Hit your damn quota, right? Mm-hmm. And so we just are very fortunate where our leaders are not very focused on those KPI metrics. They're focused on the outcomes. And it's not till we get into, like, the situation of, okay, this seller appears to have not hit their quota in like 3 consistent quarters. Now we need to get you on a PIP. We need to really start looking at what you're doing with your activity, and let's see if we can help you. Same thing with like an SDR or BDR. I don't think I've ever asked a BDR how many calls they're making or who they're like, if I'm getting meetings, I'm happy with you. If I'm not, I want to know what you're doing. And so I think that is, to a lot of what we hear, a lot of the problems stem from people like us and even marketing. Why is marketing measured, in my opinion, on marketing, whatever those MQL things are? That doesn't, like, that's not a thing that does anything. Like, what
do you really want to go down that rabbit hole? I don't think we have enough time in the day.
I do not, but like, it's not a metric. None of those are metrics that drive what the desired outcomes are for the company. So, like, let's measure people on what you want the outcomes to be. I don't know. But yeah, this is why I'm just a lowly salesperson and never want to lead a team, is because I don't want to do that.
I totally get you. Where I have trouble is when I'm like pitching to internally, right? Where it's like, look, we're onboarded, this is what they're up to. Like, then I have to present certain metrics to my leaders, right? And so that you end up in this challenging spot where you're like, look, we're going to hire an SDR. It's going to take them 3 months and they're going to start hitting numbers that we like. But like, without having the ability to track their progress, like, look, you know, we can expect that, you know, if they're sending personalized emails to this many people, that they're going to have X reply rate, et cetera, et cetera. And then from that reply rate, then maybe this many turn into conversations. Maybe we have a 10% conversion. And so we're upstream kind of able to tell higher ups, you know, this is where we expect potentially where we might actually make some money. And early on, it gets difficult. I've done a lot with startups. And so it becomes very important because you're constantly talking to investors, et cetera, et cetera. And it's tough. I mean, in a previous life, I'm a horticulturist actually by training, and I'd make a change in a system in the cannabis industry and be like, look, we're not going to see any results from what we just changed for 90 days, period. You cannot rush plants. It does not happen. And people had a really hard time with that. And I'm running into the same issue with onboarding new sellers, or even just for my own self to know, like, look, this is where I'm losing, or these are the areas where I'm having a hard time. These are the things I'm trying to track, and I'm having a hard time doing it. So then the question becomes, what do we track as a leading metric for the lagging metric of actually doing your damn job?
I have no idea.
I see your pain. I think to that note, like, because it is different in a startup environment where you have to kind of show those metrics. Then in that case, if LinkedIn is the tool that you're using, then I would agree that the best way to do that would be to use the email, as long as it's effective. For me, it's not. So if I want to use something that's ineffective. But if you're being forced to kind of track or show those metrics, then, I mean, I will do things like, I do a lot of text messaging, right, wrong, or indifferent. I text people all, I get to a point where I'm like, we're texting friendship right now. Right. Yeah. And I will just, I will put my text message conversations into the CRM so people understand what's going on. But I mean, I think it's also worth having a conversation as to, like, okay, it's impossible to log a lot of this stuff from these platforms, like, because you can't, there's a Colorado Slack, security Slack channel, right, that I'm on all the time. I can't log anything from that into a CRM. Doesn't mean I'm not doing work. So I think, like, you just gotta, if it's possible, have a dialogue with your leadership to explain kind of the paradigm shift. And just the fact that the modern technology that we're using for CRMs doesn't support these social platforms. And this is how things are being done. So I can either do, for me, what's effective. And, like, I have my QBR with my leaders next month, and they're going to want to know how many things on, because I just say, I use LinkedIn. And they're like, that's not good enough. And nobody can learn from you if you don't show what you're doing.
That's a challenge, right?
So it is. But at the same time, I push back on a lot of that busy work, because it's not my fault that these platforms don't have the ability to just log the stuff you're doing into a CRM. So what do you want me doing? My job, or copying and pasting and, like, all these? I'm not, you pick. I will do either one, but just know productivity with me copying and pasting isn't going to go anywhere. I will log stuff. We just have a thing in there that says log SMS. I don't put what's in it, but I'll log how many SMSs. And to me, that's LinkedIn, Slacks, text, whatever, so they can see kind of all of that. But yeah, that's a challenge, I think, in general, because there's a lot of outreach mechanisms people are shifting to, that you can't just get into a system to count metrics on.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, then we still end up with, like, oh, you have to have, even if you're just logging texts, then I could see leaders that don't actually understand, like, the point behind the text. Like, oh, we want to log more texts. People who text a lot with their clients are closing more business, which is true, but it's actually the relationship is the leading metric that we can't measure that is leading to that faster communication via text message, right? And so
have you had your leaders come watch What the Fuck?
No.
So literally, I was on an episode in December. I'll never forget this. And I asked Chris and Danny, I said, my leaders don't understand what the fuck you're talking about. Like, they don't get this. And Danny's response was, then invite them to an episode or three and see what happens. And fast forward to, and I think I told Danny this, fast forward to about 2 months ago, my CEO calls me and his question was, what do you think you've learned the most from Danny and Chris? Because he comes to these, he's been on these, they've come and listened to kind of some of the things. And, you know, if I think there's obviously some collateral I have within the business to say, hey, I'm doing something different. You can tell in my numbers that something has changed. I think it would be really helpful if you guys came and listened to some of this stuff, or looked at some of this content, or thought about a different way of doing things. And I think it would behoove you, if you're having those type of, you know, challenges with leadership in terms of how you're logging and tracking things, see if they'd be willing to join and just listen.
Yeah. And I mean, specifically my leaders, they're super chill. I've had other ones that weren't. And that's kind of why, like, I'm like, we trying to push on this, because this is a challenge that we all are going to deal with as sellers. like where we have to hit certain things. And I mean, I think also, as we brought up a minute ago, that kind of conflict between marketing and sales where it doesn't belong keeps happening, because like one org I was with, we were actually, we had to fight over the dollars based on whose quota attainment it went to between marketing and sales, which
gross. I would not work there then. That's what I
do not work there anymore. I joined a new company. but yeah, it's tough, right? Because they need a thing to focus on where they can tell investors what's going on. But then we also need something that's sane that we can track in order to make sure that, you know, we are communicating what actually matters to the business. And so I think this is one of those challenges that once somebody kind of cracks it, that's going to make things a lot easier for all of us.
Right.
I agree.
Ally, thanks for joining us. I want to save some time for two other guests coming on to ask questions. Appreciate you as always, Ally. Thanks for contributing.
Absolutely. Bye, thank Ally. You. See you guys later.
Ciao. All right, we're going to bring Paul on, who has a great question as well. Welcome, Paul.
Hello, everybody.
Hello.
How are you?
Hi, Paul.
Hi, Maria. Good to see you on here. We actually connected on LinkedIn quite recently. So, yeah, nice to see you.
I remember. Nice to see you.
I kind of messaged Danny as well. I'm not only new to Cyware, I'm like new, very, very new to the industry. This is all, I'd say, very insightful, and it was part of the reason I signed up to fucking first, trying to get the cadence right and understand, I suppose, the tone of messaging is really becoming more and more apparent and really more important to me. And whilst I've definitely been getting a warmer response and a better engagement just by dropping into LinkedIn, looking at certain posts and certain, you know, people that I'm prospecting at the same time, and just trying to engage that way and see if we can open up some kind of dialogue. But I suppose my main question really was that, the company that I work for, we have four products bundled into one platform that can be taken in any combination. But I just wanted to get both yours and Danny's thoughts as well as to how best to unpack that on a cold call.
I wouldn't unpack four products on a cold call.
No, no.
I wouldn't unpack products on a cold call either.
Listen, I mean, it's normally a case of, I mean, I suppose what we're predominantly known for is our threat intelligence side. So I tend to kind of use that as the opener and then try and navigate a way into jumping into the other modules as well.
What is your role, Paul? Are you an S? What is your role?
Yeah, BDR.
BDR, okay. Yeah. So I think for me, because I have SDRs, but I do a lot, most of my leads are self-generated. So I think it goes back to what I was saying before. Like my title is a director. I think it's because you get more PTO or something. I'm a director of nothing of myself really, but and my husband. But I get a ton of cold outreach all the time for sales tools because people think, oh, she's in charge, so and so, so forth. And they tend to just jump right into people like you suffer from this. Well, I'm not like everybody else. First, I'm a unique person. And then it usually pivots into my blah, 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 blah. And I don't really like that very much. I think it goes back to trying to make a human connection first. And this is not always fast and scalable, but trying to make a human connection first. I have somebody right now this morning pinged me. I can tell she's an SDR. I can tell she works for an outsourced BDR company. But her message to me was, hey, I saw you graduated from Western Michigan University. I actually live in Kalamazoo, right next to the student ghetto. Did you ever happen to live there? Well, yes, I did. Let's talk about that. And it's going to be much easier for her after we have a little bit of back and forth to just say, hi, what is NewSpire doing today to generate leads? It's not unpacking your product. It's what are you guys doing for this particular thing today? And then see what the response is. And it's just having a conversation, right? I think 99% of conversations, it's questions. You don't just sit there and and lay statements on people or unpack things on people. You're having a dialogue. It's not, you got to be able to have ask questions and understand kind of the customer's needs versus kind of what you're trying to sell them. I might not have a need. And guess what? I already have a third party BDR company. So we're all set. I'm going to tell her that, right? Yeah. And not waste her time. But maybe I don't. And so just asking questions, it's no different than asking, you know, your wife, like maybe you want to go to Taco Bell for dinner, but you don't say that. You say, hey, I do want to go out to eat. Sure. What do you want to have to eat? I don't know. What are you thinking? And it's no different than that. It's just a conversation. But I think even as BDR, laying down product or unpacking stuff, unless there's a reason for it, if it doesn't fit naturally into the dialogue you're having, you're not going to get very far.
Maria, you talked about understanding customer maturity, understanding use case or need, right? How do you do that? And would that help Paul kind of navigate how his solution could potentially fit within the context of conversation down the line, not immediately within a cold call? But is my question clear? I don't know if it is or not.
Kind of. Yeah, it's how do you understand the maturity of the client so you know what questions to ask, basically. Yeah. I think that goes back to understanding most of us sell a service or a product that addresses not 5,000 pain statements, there's 3 or 4. And if there's 5,000, then the messaging is not aligned within your organization because nothing solves that many things. So understanding the pain statements that your problem or that your stuff sells is the first thing. So you understand what questions you can start asking and how to ask them to different levels of maturity of clients. So I think first that's really important. And then I think understanding doing your research, right? So maybe you're trying to talk to a CISO, and this is something I learned in the cohort. If you guys haven't done, like, if it's still up, Danny, the Essentials course, it's in that one. You guys should all go do it. It's excellent. But understanding the type of CISO or buyer you're talking to. Post-breach CISOs are very different than compliance-driven CISOs, are very different from transformational CISOs, and they're all going to be worried about different things. Look and see kind of how big the organization is. If it's a large Fortune 500, you can assume that they've got a mature security program. And then if it's a smaller organization, you can assume they're less mature. And then based on that, that's how you form the questions that you're using to kind of unpack any pain that they're experiencing. I think the other thing too, is you have to do this in a way that is very human. So the first thing, again, I keep going back to this and I feel like I sound like a broken record. I'm sorry, but make a human connection first above and beyond anything else. You got to sell yourself before anybody's going to be willing to talk to you. It's just common nature, right? Like, I don't want to talk to the lady at the soccer field that comes up to me and is like, and says something about my parenting skills that is not nice. Like, I don't like you. You're not nice to me. I don't want to talk to you. Like, I don't want to do that. And then I'm also not going to want to talk to somebody that maybe made a human connection with me about soccer or about our daughters playing together, but then goes, hey, does she play baseball? No, I'm at the soccer field. So this is not a logical question, right? Like, you have to make sure you're doing those things too. To Danny's point, we talked with George Comedia had on his podcast the other day, Bare Knuckles and Brass Taxes. Joel was on, and he talked about the standard communication follows emotion, logic, and credibility. And so doing things in that order is going to help you engage. Once you do that, though, the other thing, Paul, that I think has helped me a lot is unpacking, there's window washers here that scared me, unpacking the vagaries. So people tend to answer stuff in the beginning with really vague answers. So somebody says something like, hey, how are you doing this? Oh, I think we do a good job. Why do you do a good job? Now's not a good time. Call me back in 6 months. Well, what's going to happen in 6 months that'll make it a good time? Like, if it's vague, unpack it and see if you can get more details so that you know how to kind of maneuver your way into the situation. Does that help? Cool.
That really helps. Thank you.
Cool. Paul, good luck. Come back next week. Come back every week. We're gonna help you out here.
Absolutely.
And good luck with Cyware.
As long as I don't hear it any more conversations about Chris in fishnets. I mean, that's still a scary, scary, scary image. Don't tell him I said that.
I should take him up here to Burcon. That's funny.
Oh my goodness. I remember that episode. I'm still trying to create a trailer from that specific segment. Anyway, nice to see you, Paul. We're going to bring on.
Bye, Paul.
we're going to bring on Justin now, who is also a follower and a listener for some time. Justin, hello.
Oh, hi, friend.
Hey, friend. First time caller, long time listener. So thanks for having me on. I feel like I'm off-centered. There we go. So I wanted to actually perhaps ask you, Maria, because I find that this works best for me, but and I suspect just following you on LinkedIn that this is also something that's effective for you, but the conference kind of connection or going to events being perhaps a little bit more impactful than, you know, LinkedIn perhaps or cold calling or whatever it may be. I mean, is that for you where you find more of your success or like warm to hot leads that eventually turn into something is those connections because they're more personal. People get to see what you're actually really about versus, I mean, Zoom's great, video conferencing's great, but I don't know that you get a totality of what somebody is unless you're actually meeting them in person, read body language, stuff like that. So, you know, do you lean one way or the other on perhaps what's more effective for you?
So that is such a good question, Justin.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I think, so when I go to a trade show, my goal isn't necessarily to leave there with leads. I don't scan badges. I don't blow them up after the show. My goal is to leave with, depending on the size of the conference, 5 meaningful human connections. And from those human connections, so that's one time. And I'm in a weird spot where my territory isn't a territory I can just get in my car and drive somewhere real quick. I have to fly to California. I'm in Denver. I'm all over the freaking place. I live in Michigan. So I think that the initial human connection at a trade show is much, to your point, more powerful, and people get to kind of see and know who you are. But then from there, it makes it a lot easier to leverage for me. Like a great example, I met somebody at RSA. Danny and I went to a dinner with the Tinkerers, and I met this gentleman at RSA. It was a late night. I had a little bit of tequila, so it wasn't great. But I was at a show last week, and he was there. And we talked for like 25, 30 minutes before I was like, and there was a Taylor Swift connection. It's a whole thing. But I realized, oh my God, I already know you. And I invited you to come to this and you're here and this is great. And that quickly now escalated into, he just text messaged me while we're on this call. Right. So it makes it easier to kind of then do what you need to do using the virtual stuff, I think, because you've had that opportunity to meet in person. So I think it's a little bit of column.
Yeah. And I should probably, for me, I should probably alter the question a little bit. Trade booth is, I think, a marketing event for generating leads. That is not where I do my best business. My best business at any trade show is after the sun goes down. So,
yes.
You know, like last week at the event I was at for Tribes, I was having conversations with CIOs, CISOs, et cetera, that they don't typically come to the booths, right? They're going to private events or suite parties or whatever it may be. So that's where I make those connections that are a lot more meaningful. I mean, and a lot of that has to do with relationship building and, you know, getting to the point where you're included on those type of things. But yeah, I mean, I suspect that likewise
that's
most of what you do is building those relationships at those conferences that then you're free to do text messages or have more open conversations because they got to learn a little bit about who you are as a person, not necessarily what product. And back to the previous person who came on, you know, the first 10 minutes of any meeting I do with somebody, if I've never met them, I don't talk one part about what my product is. It's, you know, what are your outcomes? What are you looking to do as a business? Because for two purposes, one, it sets me up to, you know, and I think Danny talks about this a lot, listening. A lot of salespeople, a lot of people in general don't listen enough. They want to talk. You can't learn what your customer is doing unless you're listening. So starting there, listening sets me up for understanding, in the case of the last person, perhaps what product is the best product to position for what their outcome is, what they're looking to do. Or we saved ourselves a bunch of times and said, you know what, I can't actually help you. This is not something that my organization provides. And I respect you. Your time is the only currency any of us actually have as giving that back to you. Not to say like, you know, oh, I'm going to give you your time back, because I hate when people say that. But with that concept in mind of, you know, like, hey, let's just call this right now. If I know somebody like yourself, Maria, and I've talked to you multiple times about this and something I mentioned in the comments, I think that's an opportunity for all of us as vendors to go, well, I don't do this, but I know this person is a quality person with the best intentions, and their organization also has those principles. Perhaps they can help you and make that introduction. So just to kind of follow on to what the last person talked about.
That's totally huge. And I think that's one of the things that has been one of my favorite things about what Danny and Chris have cultivated here, not just to help the practitioners, but the relationships. Like Justin, I would never have, we've talked, we've had FaceTime calls, we've talked, we chat, we text, we run things by each other, right? I have a ton of people that are in this chat that I do all of that stuff with. I have people that I go, hey, I'm working this deal and I'm missing something and I don't know. And is this something maybe you could help with? I don't think it's the right thing for me. And I think really the community that's been created as a subset of these kind of what the fucks is for me as a salesperson been invaluable. But I also, to your point, now that you kind of rephrased the question, yes, the best work is done never in a booth. It's done after hours. It's done in the lobbies. It's done at the bars. It's done at the happy hours.
The booth really serves as a purpose for HR to give them a reason why we're out drinking with clients and customers and attending like flip cup tournaments and suites. I mean, that is why you have a booth. Otherwise, it would be weird otherwise.
Yeah, you damn vampires. Anyway. I love it. I love it. Justin, always good to see you. How's the racing going?
Good to see you, Justin.
I don't think we're going to do another race until December. I'll have to perhaps get a WTF logo printed to put on the car in addition to the audience first one that sits there. So
awesome. We're going to get some cows printed out, or whatever the hell they were called. James, I don't remind me, James, what they're called. I don't know. Anyway, okay. I digress. We have time for one more question. Justin, again, thank you. We have time for one more question. Maria, I do want to know, for any, you know, for those starting out in sales, or even those who are, you know, veteran sales professionals struggling to build relationships and build that relationship capital, what's one piece of advice, and it could be two or three too, by the way, you would emphasize above all else?
I think be yourself. There shouldn't be a difference between your professional self and your personal self. I think that's a lot to juggle. So be yourself and be genuine with everything you're doing. I think that's really important. I think being constantly curious. You can't ask good questions if you're not genuinely curious about what's driving somebody, what motivates somebody, what somebody's struggling with. You have to be constantly curious and constantly asking questions in order to learn that and expand upon things so that you can start building that relationship capital. And I also think don't be shy to ask for like help. One thing that I've had a really hard time doing, because again, I think that we're all in this to make it better. I don't think there's a good side or a bad side. Anybody that's here today is interested in trying to make this whole thing better. It's not easy for us as salespeople, right? There's a lot of noise in the market right now about stop doing this, don't do that. Okay, well, we're trying, we're listening, but there's plenty of folks out there that are willing to help. So, you know, you see somebody, you see me, a connection that I have, and it's somebody you really want to get involved with, or it's somebody that you'd like to talk to, don't hesitate to use this network to help you and figure out ways that we can all help each other. I think that that's, I think that that is, to me, the three biggest things that were hard for me when I started shifting to this was how much of my personal life can bleed into my professional life. Turns out a ton. My kid comes with me to all sorts of things. How much of my personal life can I share on social media? Turns out it's actually helpful because people then understand who I am as a person. And there's nothing wrong with that. And then how much can I rely on folks to help me? I mean, Danny, how many times have I called you and been like, I got an event in Columbus. I've got 7 tickets and I'm out of people to call. Like, who could you know anybody? Can you bring it? See if I don't want things to go to waste or whatever. So feel free to use the folks that you know are in it for the greater good, because I think that we're all pretty open and willing to help. Let's all do the right thing so that we're making the whole ecosystem better.
I love it. This has been so valuable for me as well. I mean, I've learned a lot from you in this 1 hour session. Wow. Obviously everything combined is super valuable for me as I come on every week with Chris, but having you on, giving your perspective and experience, has just been absolutely phenomenal. And I'm thinking we might have to have you on a little bit more. So I'll give you a call after.
I didn't suck.
No, not at all. What are you talking about? And tell me, you've got something going on in November with Chris. What's going on in November?
Oh, yes. Anybody in Denver? So we are doing, Chris calls me a few weeks ago and says, I want to do a whiskey and watches and work networking event. So we rented out Right Time Watches in Denver, and I've got invites out. There's registration links. We'd love to have as many people that are local to the area or fly in, if you'd like, and come hang out with us. It's just no sales gimmicks, just good people and network building.
Amazing. That's awesome. I might have to drop by. I registered, by the way.
So. I feel like you do need to drop by.
Yeah, it's just it's mandatory at this point.
Get the fam together.
Seriously. I love it. Maria, thank you for stepping in today. You are obviously always welcome to the show. You know, you are an advocate of this mission of both Audience First and WTF. So thank you again. And folks, if you like the show, thumbs up in the comments. If you want Maria back, fires in the comments, let me know. You know, we got to see what her schedule is like, but this has been absolutely surprisingly awesome. I knew it was going to be great, but this has exceeded all my expectations. So well done.
Thanks, guys. It was really fun. This was fun. I enjoyed it. And I liked the questions. I thought hopefully it was helpful.
Great. Awesome. I appreciate it. Thank you for the feedback. And thank you again to everybody. This has been another episode of What the Fuck Did I Just Read? Tech Sales and Marketing Edition. We are